The recording has now started.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I'm going to basically go through a review of the agenda. That'll be followed by the roll call. This gives people a few more minutes to get in for the roll call. We've got the next item is continuing the review of the public statements and stakeholder groups and constituencies that have been received. It's my hope, I think, that we're near the end of that and that possibly can be finished today. That was certainly the laid out schedule for that. Assuming that happens, then we'll basically review the work plan for what is next, then go into a beginning review. I don't know how time will go today in terms of completing it, reviewing the mind map approach that had been set out for the charter question A, looking at that in terms of the work plan, looking at that in terms of what has been learned and discussed in the review of public comment, amend it at all, and go through that. Then confirmation of next meeting, next steps, and any other business. Any comments, corrections, changes, et cetera, on the agenda? Alan, I see you put your horn on. Did that mean you wanted to raise your hand? Or is that just
no, Ivory, is okay. I don't know. My
okay,
sound is max, but I need maybe it's my problem. I barely hear you.
Okay, sorry. Well, maybe I'm just not shouting loud enough in the microphone. Okay, I just want to make sure that I wasn't ignoring a comment.
Okay, no, that's great.
Okay, if I've got no comments on the agenda, I see no hands, I've got no alternates. Okay, great. Natalie, could you do a roll call at this point? Thank you.
Sure, Avi. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the IRTPC call on the 7th of February, 2012. On the call today, we have Alain Béranger, Barbara Knight, Avery Doria, Mikey O'Connor, Bob Mountain, Simonetta Batiger on the Adobe, Chris Chaplow, equally on the Adobe, Philip Corwin and Kevin Erdman. From staff, we have Marika Koenigs, Glenda Saint-Géry, and myself, Natalie Peregrine. We have apologies from Jacob Williams, Matt Serlin, Angie Graves, James Bodell, and Paul Diaz. I would like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you, Avery.
Okay, thank you. And as ever, I want to remind people that if you need to make an update to your statement of interest, please do so and flag it to the group. Thank you. Okay, Marika, where exactly did we leave off? I admit that at the end of the last meeting, my attention strayed, and I'm not really sure exactly if I remember exactly where we left off on the discussion.
This is Marika. We left off at comment 9.
At comment 9. Okay.
Well, page 6.
Right. Then I guess beginning with comment 9 is a good thing. Will you take it through as you have been through to now?
Yes, sure. So comment 9 still relates to, I think, charter question C, the question on whether or not to require IANA IDs, and it's a comment from the registry stakeholder group that said it's generally agreed that registrar name changes often do make it difficult to ensure that the correct registrar is identified, and use of the IANA ID may be helpful in confirming registrar identification. It is reasonable to think that all registries do maintain the IANA ID for each registrar in their registration systems.
Thank you. Did anyone wish to comment on that? It's sort of a statement of fact as they see it. I guess the question I have is when they say it is reasonable to think that all registries do maintain the IANA ID for each register in their registration systems, is that indeed the case that all do, or do we know, or is there a way of knowing? Barbara, please.
Hi, this is Barbara.
Please, go ahead.
Okay, so basically all registries have monthly reporting that's due to ICANN, and within those monthly reporting there is a per registrar activity report, if you will. And within that report, registries, provide the registrar name as well as the IANA ID. So given that, it's pretty clear that somewhere within their systems, all registries would be maintaining that information.
Okay, they just don't necessarily have it in the places where they would need to be using it for these functions.
Exactly, and part of that is because most registry operators will support not only GTLDs, but CCTLDs, and as you may know, CCTLD registrars are not required to have ICANN accreditation, so therefore they may not have an IANN ID, or what we call a GURID. So, based on that, that's what has really driven a lot of registry operators to move to using a proprietary ID instead, because they have those for all registrars that are in their system and performing transactions.
Thank you. Does anyone else wish to comment on number 9? Okay. And I don't see any necessary working group response here, because it's really a statement about what happens and expectations. I don't know. Is there a working group response to this other than to acknowledge the point? Okay. In which case, I guess then, yes, we acknowledge. Yes, Roy, please.
Hi, good morning. Sorry I'm later. Just joined. And so, Barbara, I may not have caught what you said that we talked about offline. Did I miss it?
This is Barbara. We haven't gotten to that point yet, Roy,
okay.
I think it's probably going to be in one of the future comments. But thanks.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm just getting caught up.
Okay, thank you. So we'll leave 9 basically just as a comment acknowledged in that there's no real response for this group to make to that, other than, I guess, generally agreeing that, yeah, they have it, but I guess perhaps also acknowledging that while they may have it, they do not necessarily have it instantiated in their system framework in a way that makes it immediately usable. Would that be a correct way of putting it? I see Barbara agreeing. Okay. If there are no other comments on that one, then move on to 10.
So this is Marika. So these are basically comments that relate to some of the more detailed questions that we asked in the stakeholder group template. So the first question there was in relation to charter question A, the issue report notes that the data on the frequency of hijacking cases is a pivotal part of the analysis. A mechanism should be explored to develop accurate data around this issue in a way that meets the needs of registrars to protect proprietary information, while at the same time providing a solid foundation for database policymaking and data on legitimate transfer activity benefiting from the current locking policy wording needs to be collected. And the registry stakeholder group responds to that specific question. Registries do not have a comprehensive view of hijacking cases, as very few cases ever reach the registries for action. It is agreed that data relating to the frequency of hijacking instances is critical to understanding the extent of the issue. The registry stakeholder group is hopeful that registrars may be able to propose a mechanism by which to gather and provide information in a manner that will protect the proprietary nature of the data.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any comments, questions, elucidations on point 10? Yes, Bob.
Hi, thanks, Aubrey. This is Bob. I guess the question I would have is I know one of the reasons that there's been some concern about collecting hijacking data has been sort of opening up or giving the hijackers some ammunition or insights into how the system works or whatever. I guess I just like to propose a question where if the information is collected in the aggregate, is that in fact going to help the hijackers, or by keeping it at some level aggregated or anonymous, is that simply just going to give us data that we can work with to identify the scope of the problem without necessarily giving the hijackers information that would hurt us? That's all.
Okay, thank you. Any comment to that? Yes, Mikey. Please go ahead, Mikey. Either that or you're mute.
Yeah, sorry, I was very eloquent, but it works better with the phone not muted. This is Mikey O'Connor. I don't really have a direct response to Bob's question, but one of the things that we've been working on in the DSSA is a fairly elaborate protocol to protect confidential information, and I mostly just wanted to alert this group that we'd certainly be happy to share that, and that model might be a good way to handle this information in such a way that we could get pretty detailed information but protect that information from broad distribution and thus maybe mitigate that risk that Bob is asking us about. Sharing information provides ammunition to the bad guys discussion is a thread that's run through just about every IRTP working group back to the dawn of time, and so that's the reason it's in there. And I think that one of the things that we could do is, rather than confront that assumption directly, maybe just work on mitigating the risks of that in the way that we handle the information.
Okay, thanks, Mikey. As part of what you said, is there a recommended action that we learn from the DSSA groups, what you're referring to, and have a more detailed conversation on that? Is that one of the things you would recommend we do in terms of following up this issue?
Yeah, I think that it would be easy for us to share the protocol, and at a minimum we might take a look at it. So sure, yeah, let's put that in as a recommendation.
Okay, well,
it sounds like a good plan.
I see. Well, I was basically just trying to interpret what you were saying. Simonetta, please.
One thought I had about this is, and I know we discussed this at length in IRTP Part B, and I think one concern was from certain registrars that they wouldn't want to be known for being a relatively larger or lesser problem in regards to hijacking cases, because I think there is assumptions that certain registrars have more or less hijacking cases than others, and it would be bad press for whoever happens to be one who has relatively many of them. But I thought one of the items that would have been very nice to know is just the number of cases. So one thing that would be put together as part of IRTP Part B would eventually kind of provide some of that data, but I was wondering if there was like a trusted entity that, for example, maybe the registrar stakeholder group has someone who is kind of like a liaison to us who could collect just like from, I don't know, maybe the top 30 or 40 registrars in the world, just how many cases did you have, so we can get a sense for how often does it happen that a domain name gets hijacked versus how often does a domain name legitimately transfer? And if that ratio turns out to be it's like 0.001% of all cases, then that tells you something, versus if, let's say, the ratio were 5% of all cases, that tells you something else. So I think that piece of data would be very beneficial for this group to have, so we can kind of gauge the extent of that issue, and it's not been something we've ever been able to establish.
Okay, thank you. So if I understand correctly, and because I wasn't an active part of B, I was just one of the lurkers, is that at some point in time, IRTP B, if everything's approved and affected, there will be this data. But at this point, there isn't the data. So is there some way we can get at least some notion, some statistics, some what have you, from a registrar liaison to as input into this group so we know how serious an issue we're dealing with? Is that close? And therefore,
yes.
A recommendation would be making a request of the registrars for some liaising with this group on this information. Is there anyone from the registrars that can speak to the possibility, the probability, the likelihood? I mean, I wouldn't assume that bad press would be something that would keep somebody from being willing to discuss it, but then again, what do I know about bad press? So is there anyone that would like to comment on that further? Okay, so we basically put down as a second recommended action is this liaising with the registrars to get some indicative information of how much of a problem it is, and perhaps we can work with that registrar liaison when it appears to determine exactly what kind of information is possible, is obtainable without great fear. Any other comments on 10? So I guess our immediate response to 10 would be that, you know, we understand that the problem has existed since before dawn, and that we are looking at both more information on the extent of the issue and information from DSSA and perhaps other groups, if there are other groups, who have solutions that, while possibly not solving, at the very least mitigate the issues. Is that a reasonable summary for both response and recommended action? Okay, seeing no hands either way. Okay, I see at least one green. Do I see any violently objecting reds? Yes, Chris, please.
Sorry, I pushed the wrong button. It was actually meant to be an agreement. So
thank you. Thank you. And I see no reds on that. Any other comments on 10 before moving on? Okay, thank you. How about the next one, Marika? Thanks.
This is Marika. So the next one relates to further information on the process that CCTLDs use to affect the change of control. And the registry stakeholder group notes there that the registry stakeholder group defers to the registrar community for feedback on this issue. And just to note that this was something that we already discussed as well in one of our previous meetings, noting that input from others, including the CCTLD registry, should be explored.
Okay, thank you. So do we have any further discussion on this one at this point? In terms of recommended actions, I assume that we've already done outreach to CCTLDs, and that's an action recommended and I think perhaps already taken. Are there any other recommended actions that people would suggest? Any other comments on this issue? None. Okay, then we can move on with this one. In the next one, the question 12.
Yes, this is Marika again. So basically this relates a bit to the similar way, asking for further input on data and incidents in relation to charter question B and C. And here the registry stakeholder group also knows that it refers to the registrar community for feedback, noting that the registry stakeholder group has little to no information relating to the age of FOA used in the transfer of domain names from one registrar to another. And there we already noted as well that it would be of interest to get input from others in the community as well.
Okay. Do we have any recommended actions on this one? Not at this time. Does anyone have a... Does anyone have a comment on 12? So one of these things, it seems that there are several things to me that are looking for additional input from registrars, additional input from others. At some point, and we've done separate reaching out, there may be sort of a... Oh, okay, Bob, yes, I see your hand up while I'm rambling on.
Thanks, Avery. This is Bob speaking. Unfortunately, I'm sorry I was unable to make the call last week. I had a conflict while traveling. But I did read the transcript, and it looked like there was quite a bit of discussion, if I'm not mistaken, about this towards the middle of the meeting. I guess the question is on the topic of FOA, where did – it wasn't clear based on the transcript where we left it around the options of extending the FOA auto-renewing. I was wondering if someone who was on the call could perhaps clarify that just so I'm on the same page in terms of where we were to go next on that.
As far as I remember, and maybe I lost it, and Marika or someone else can correct me, I think it was a ranging discussion without a concluding point, and I think going to making the decisions on what or where is sort of the next stage, but I may be mistaken. But I don't think any decisions were made on what to do, I mean, on sort of the points themselves, but more we're in the process of making decisions on do we need to do anything else? Where do we need to go on these things? I don't believe we made a final decision that this group recommends X or Y. Yes, Bob.
Okay, right. Sorry, I took my hand down. I shouldn't have. This is Bob. I guess that is that appropriate then, or is that where we're going to this question 12, is that where really this FOA is mainly centered? Is it next to get further comments, or should we have a subgroup go off and work it and come back with recommendations? Just curious as to what we think the specifics on this one should be.
Yeah, and that's sort of, I guess, similar to my question. Now, since it's referring mostly to Charter B and C, and we're moving up on A, perhaps we do have a little bit of time to figure out what we want to do here, and perhaps the recommended action at this point is your question, you know, in terms of the information and the discovery or whatever that's necessary to make this, figure out how we want to do it. And do we want to do outreach with specific questions? Do we want a subgroup? I guess it would be interesting to hear. I see a couple of hands. What the view is at the moment. Bob, you still have your hand up.
Yeah, I guess, I'll certainly volunteer to participate or head up a subgroup, if that's what people agree is the right thing to do, just to further flesh this one out a little bit. I'll lower my hand. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Barbara.
Hi, this is Barbara. So from my perspective, I just wanted to say that I do agree with Bob's idea to do a working group, smaller subset, if you will. And maybe it should be comprised of registrars who have the data, who kind of know, can put together some statistics on what the typical FOA age is and bring some of that information back to the group so we can kind of see what, in practice would be perhaps a reasonable period of time for a transfer to be processed based on, FOA age or what have you. And then from that, we could go to a larger group to see what people's thoughts are. That's all.
Okay, thanks. The only thing in that I would question, and I'm curious to see what other people say, is that while certainly the group would need to have registrars in it, if someone that was not a registrar wanted to be part of this subgroup because they had, either deep understanding or deep impressions about what kind of information should be found, would you object to that in your formulation of a group? And I see Mikey, Barbara, and Bob. Mikey.
Thanks, Ivory. It's Mikey O'Connor for the transcript. I think a lot of it depends on the nature of the group. If the group is an information gathering group, with a charter to bring back data for the rest of the committee, while I can't imagine that there'd be any restrictions on non-registrars participating, just for sake of transparency, I wouldn't think it'd be terribly interesting because it's mostly a data mining exercise. If, on the other hand, the subgroup is really the subgroup to handle charter question B, then for sure I think we have to have all sorts of people in there. And so I think one of the things we might want to do is be careful to charter that subgroup appropriately so that people know whether it's really necessary for them to participate or not. If it's a subgroup that's told, go off and find out the numbers and come back and tell us, then I'm not terribly useful as a participant. But if it's go figure out the answer to charter question B, then I think we've got a broader interest and base for participation.
No, thank you. Yeah, no, I understand. I think sometimes, though, there are just people that are into data mining because they're into data mining and may have an outside perspective that helps. I think this group is primarily, as you put it, the data mining. Okay, I see Mike Utan's still up. One hand disappeared, but Bob's is still up.
Yeah, sorry, this is Bob. I guess my thinking, my suggestion was, not just get some data, but come up with recommendations on what the, what the appropriate or some scenarios on how to solve this. So I would think it would be a blend myself. But if the, group would rather just get some data as the first step, I would certainly, agree that it would make sense to have it be a more registrar-focused focus team. So that's all.
Okay. And I got a note from Barbara is in the chat that says, took my hand down as I agree with Mikey's perspective. It should be open to all if it goes beyond pulling data. And I guess the point I was making is that, and Simona, you're saying it should go beyond just the data to the solutions, or because I was thinking it might be good to start with something that is pulling data that is open primarily to registrars, but that others could participate if they had a need to, and then to take a checkpoint on the data before moving on to actually doing solutions. But I guess, Simonetta, you have your hand up.
I think just from my perspective, and I think Bob would have a similar experience with this, FOAs in a marketplace scenario and in moving names from A to B, they don't necessarily only get issued the moment someone is actually doing the transfer. They might be something that's on file somewhere and has been there for a very long time. And I know that some of the corporate registrars like Mark Monitor and these corporations, they also have FOAs on file for some of their clients for very long times. And they might not necessarily use them the same way as they're typically used. So when we're looking at this FOA issue, I think it would be helpful for everyone to understand all the different kind of use cases there are and what their purpose is, so we can come to a good picture of what's going on with the use of FOAs and what needs to be taken into account there.
Okay, thank you. Mikey.
Thanks, Avery. It's Mikey for the transcript. I think we're working on the right issue, which is the charter for this subgroup. I think in no case should the subgroup be restricted to the registrars. If somebody wants to participate in the data mining, I strongly support the notion that they should be able to participate. It's just that I think in that case, most of us probably wouldn't have a lot to contribute, but as Avery points out, some of us are smart about that kind of thing and could probably help. But Simonetta and Bob are talking, I think, about a broader charter subgroup, and I'm not sure that we really need to take that conversation down to a subgroup. Maybe we do. But I think that broader charter is really come up with the recommendation about charter question B. I mean, that whole conversation, it seems to me, fits into our primary charge as a working group. So it might be easier for a subgroup to go off and come up with recommendations, but in that case, I think lots of people get to be involved in that.
Thank you. Bob?
Yeah. Thanks, Aubrey. Yeah, I guess, Mikey, I wasn't thinking long extended absence, with much work to come back, come back later. I think in IRTPB, I thought we had some success where very short iterations where the team would go off and just try and, you know, subgroup, small team would just come up with some ideas and just bring them back very quickly, you know, short iterations, and more than anything, just a small focused team to come up with suggestions which could then be discussed at the larger group. So I think that's what I was thinking, just based on my experience with IRTP and what seemed to work there.
What I would like to suggest and see if this works, I think there seems to be general support on there being a subgroup, on it being open, but of course restricted to people that have something pertinent to say or do. So it'll be mostly registrars. What I'm wondering if we can't just sort of, in that quick iterative style, say that the first item that this group is going to work on is the information gathering problem, and come back with suggestions of how and what in terms of the information, and at another point then have that group, perhaps that same group or that same group expanded once it's filled a first step of gathering the information, then move on perhaps to discussing, but basically the whole group having looked at the information and saying, aha, there's interested in solutions for this nature, for that aspect, result. So would it be acceptable to people to do that, to put together a small group of pertinent involved individuals, mostly registrars, but others possibly, to basically start with the information gathering, come back to this group, and then see where it goes from there? Does anyone object to doing it that way? I see agreement for agreeing to it. Any reds for thinking it's a horrible way to proceed on the step-by-step? Okay, thanks. And I heard at least Bob volunteer. All right, thank you. I see no red, so that's good. I see a hand up. Marika, sorry I missed your hand because I had the slider down. Sorry.
No problem. I just actually put it up. This is Marika. Because my question is actually, would this group then start in parallel of discussions on the other charter questions? And
yes.
I know we spoke as well, and we'll probably go back, I guess, to the mind map where we discussed before about the approaches for the different charter questions. So I'm wondering as well if it's worth, you know, going back there to see what we said there, to see if that aligns with what we're discussing now of creating this new sub-team, and just to understand better as well how it would then fit into our discussions of all the other issues that we are still covering, as this is just the first step of actually looking at the comments that were received.
Yeah. I think one of the reasons why I was suggesting that it just work on the information gathering was I was thinking of it as a parallel activity for some people, thinking it was something that may take time to figure out and to actually gather. So had been thinking of, but you're right, we can certainly look at how it fits in. So I guess there's a recommendation that we do this, but we need to go back to the schedule, as you're sort of indicating, before we indicate, not perhaps when it starts, but when it should be ready with an answer by, and then it gives it, as a group, time to figure out how it wants to get it done. That makes sense? So in terms of the recommended action, its first step is gather information by a small group, and we'll figure out where that fits in with the schedule as we move along. Any other issues on 12? Okay, moving to 13, and 13 is our last. What a lucky number.
Yeah, so this is Marika, and question 13 is asking for, or we asked your input on the use of proprietary IDs versus the IANA IDs, and this is a comment I think we already briefly touched upon in our previous call, because the feedback from the registry stakeholder group is that at least two registries have been identified as using proprietary IDs instead of the IANA assigned IDs. In the case of at least one of these registries, proprietary IDs are used in all registrar-registry communications. The primary driver behind the use of proprietary IDs versus IANA IDs is security. The registries that currently use proprietary IDs have indicated the use of proprietary IDs aids in the prevention of mining of WHOIS data based on publicly available IANA IDs. there would need to be a compelling reason for these registries to transition to the use of IANA IDs, as the level of effort involved would be significant, given that all systems would be impacted. In addition, it was later added that in certain cases, registries deal with registrars that also sell CCTLDs, for which there is no IANA ID, and in those cases, it's considered more efficient to have one single proprietary ID.
Yeah, I think we sort of did cover that when we discussed point, what was it? Nine. I hear myself echoing. So I think, is there anything new to add on this point other than articulation? Could somebody who has the echo please turn off their phone? Thank you. Okay, so is there anything? Yes, Barbara.
Hi, this is Barbara for the transcript, and I just wanted to note here that Roy and I actually were able to get together with some representatives from other registries as well and have a conversation surrounding this. And I don't know, Roy, do you want to do the summary of that, or do you want me to go ahead and just summarize it?
If you wouldn't mind, but I have your notes up here, too, to make sure everything's covered.
Okay. So basically, the conversation we had was surrounding what it would take in order to, you know, try to move from a proprietary ID to a to the IANA IDs, should that you know, be deemed something that is, you know, critical to being able to operate the registrar's business. So, I mean, in that conversation, I think we all agreed that, you know, anytime we're looking at development efforts on the side of the registry, you know, we obviously have development and roadmaps for development that go out, you know, in some cases, you know, many quarters, and I know in the case of VeriSign, I can speak personally from that, you know, we go out, you know, 12 to 15, sometimes 18 months, you know, from a development perspective and just getting things on the roadmap. So depending on what all is touched by the development effort, just getting it on the roadmap and implemented, you know, tested and implemented the whole nine yards, you know, it could take up to 18 months for implementation. So, you know, obviously that's something to take into consideration. I'm not saying, no, we shouldn't do it if there is a valid reason to do it, but we do need to recognize that the implementation window would need to be long enough to allow all registries to comply with that. Further to that, I think it would be very helpful because in order to determine the level of effort, we really need to know very specifically what it is that the registrars, which reports would be impacted, which communications would be impacted, that in order to define what those requirements are and then, again, gain that level of effort. So that's just the feedback that we got in the initial conversation that we had about this in a smaller group last week. So, Roy, does that pretty much sum it up?
Yes, it is. I think you covered everything nicely.
Okay, thank you. I have Simonetta with her hand up. I have one quick question on this. Is this a sort of ad hoc group that's going to continue talking about this, or was this like a one-shot, let's have a conversation on this issue, just to understand how it fits into ongoing efforts? Barbara or Roy?
Okay, so this is Barbara. To the extent that that we need to have further conversations, then I think everybody that, you know, joined Roy and myself on that call would be available, because obviously we all have a vested interest in how this comes out. So while we don't have a regularly scheduled meeting time, to the extent that we need to engage that group, you know, there is a willingness to participate in that in order to get the information that's needed.
Okay, thank you. Simonetta.
Mikey was first.
Mikey, oh, sorry. I keep having the slider off. I apologize. Mikey.
Absolutely no worries, Avery. Marika, you might want to make the participants box a little bit taller. That slider does cause a problem because people can't see the whole list, and so they can't see people raising and lowering their hands. So that'll help that. I want to make sort of a parallel point to the one that we made on number 12. I think we're confusing the conversation about this request, which is really a request for data, with the actual charter question. And I think just like 12, what we might want to do is kick off some sort of parallel subgroup type effort to gather the data just to find out. Because that's, you know, that's really what this is about, is getting that specific information pulled together, you know, who's using what, so that we can feed that information into the broader question. And so while I think that Barbara and Roy's comments are great, I would suggest that they're not appropriate here. They're appropriate back up underneath the actual charter question, and that the way to tackle this is pretty similar to the way that we're tackling the FOA issue, that we may want to have a little group go off and first job is pull some data together, and then as the group gets closer to making iterative policy recommendations, that the group get broader as the rest of the members of the working group can actually participate and contribute.
I see Barbara agreeing. Thank you. Simonetta? I didn't check. Did anybody else?
I think one other data point, as we're just trying to figure out what is the information we need to know on this one, would be to find out from those registries who are offering their services as backend providers for the NoGTLD applicants, what their intentions are in relation to the IANA IDs. Because I think the main concern from a registrar's point of view came up with the fact that there might be hundreds of new registries joining the ecosystem that may or may not use IANA IDs, and it would be desirable for registrars in working with all these new entities that it is one common approach to the issue. So I think if we could collect and ask specifically those registries like VeriSign or NuStar or Auth Registry and all the others that are out there offering their services to the new applicants, what they are intending to do, that might be a helpful data point for us to have.
Okay. Well, thank you. So there's nothing, I see an agreement from Mikey. So it's not something that, for all the times I've read the new GTLD applicant guidelines, there's no requirements on this going forward on the new registries. Is that correct? This is not something that was preempted by the application guidebook writers with an existing solution. Simonetta, your hand's up again.
Honestly, I don't know. So
yeah.
Another piece of data we should just look up is there anything in the guidebook that speaks to this already?
And I'm terribly ashamed of myself for not knowing, since I sometimes think I've memorized that book and could refer to it as, you know, Talmudically, but I guess not on this issue. So, okay, so I get the impression that there is also a level of support for the notion of putting together another small information gathering team that would work in parallel and basically have as a goal having the information by the time this working group, if I looked at it from a scheduling perspective, it would be by the time we were ready to start Charter Question C, then hopefully the information would have been gathered and could be presented as part of that discussion. Simonetta, does your hand up again? Or did you...
I just had is, just from a timing perspective, these new applicants are going to start setting up their operational setup as early as fall or maybe Q1 of next year. I don't think we're going to be done with the work this work group is doing. So if the topic is one that registrars care about a lot, then maybe just on an informal level, letting the right people know, and again, that would probably be the back-end service providers for these new applicants, that it might be a best practice, because if you want to have access to the registrar channel as a sales outlet, that you use IANA IDs, that could just be a piece of feedback that we could informally give to those folks, because I don't think we're going to be done and wrapped up and having everything gone through the board and before this becomes an issue.
Okay, I see Mikey agreeing with that. So I would think that kind of recommendation, if it was going to come out of this group and sent to the GNSO, that would come when we were actually discussing see and had gotten some information. So while I think you're right, this group won't have finished and gotten approval from GNSO and board by then, I think we probably will have gotten to the fee discussion in time, although I'm not sure. Yes, Mikey.
This is Mikey for the transcript. There is a history in the IRTP of another way to communicate. We had an issue come up with the budget several IRTPs ago where a subgroup of us informally wrote a memo to the budget gods, I can't remember who, saying that although we hadn't finished our work, it was clear from what we were doing that it would be good to allocate some budget to improve the systems in the compliance operation. And we just formed a gaggle of ourselves because we were out of whack with the schedule of the IRTP. But almost everybody in the working group at that time signed it. And, you know, if schedule means that we can't pump out an actual recommendation in time for what Simonetta is proposing, we might consider that kind of thing instead.
We have, as June 1st, our initial report. If we need to do something sooner, I think we still have time. I don't know, would June 1st, once we've got our initial report, be too late for such a recommendation? I mean, we're barely into application review at that point. And so assuming that we're on schedule, by the time IRTPC initial report was due in time for Prague, we should have covered the issue. Or would that be considered too late for this? Yes, Simonetta.
I think it's fine to have a recommendation or an initial recommendation by June 1st, but knowing also what Barbara and Roy have shared in terms of registry roadmap planning and things like that, and knowing from my own experience being a product manager here at CETO, I would always prefer to know things as soon as possible. So even if this is not like a formal statement going the direction of the registry backend providers, just to kind of like, even if it's just a description of what we're talking about and giving them feedback that registrars would like that as soon as possible, I think would be nice for them to have as a heads up.
Okay. So in terms of this issue, yes, Roy, please.
Yes, I think all the comments are good, but I think it still goes back to what Barbara was saying earlier about having an understanding of the additional information and the specific requirements of, you know, what messages are being passed here, what communications are being used and reports are being generated. So, I mean, I think there's a little bit of, there might be a little bit of chicken and egg here, but it's still having an understanding for the from the registry's perspective of what of what's being, you know, what the IANID is being used for.
Okay, thanks. So if I understood correctly, what you're saying is, and I had been thinking of cars and horses, is that first we should gather the information and then we should decide if we're making either an informal or a formal or any sort of recommendation. Would that be a correct interpretation?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. Does anyone object to gathering the information before we think about making a recommendation? No objections. Do I see any hands? Yes, Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to point out, of course, that if this working group decides in the end of recommendations that are then adopted by the council and the board with appropriate voting thresholds, that would, of course, also become binding on new GTLDs if they would fit the consensus policy description. And also a question on, I know it's very important indeed to get the information out early, but I do wonder whether registries would start implementing this or putting this on their roadmaps before it would even be adopted by the council and the board. So I think it's very important indeed to socialize it and at least you know, make sure that they're aware that this might be coming. But I would be curious to know if registrars would already start making plans for that, even if it wouldn't have been adopted yet by council and board.
I would assume statistically, from the way development plans go, at least some would be thinking about it just because it was possible. Yes, Barbara.
This is Barbara. So I think that's something that we would have to go back to the, you know, registry stakeholder group just to get some feedback on. You know, obviously, as Avery was saying, it will vary registry by registry. So we can get a general feel based on feedback that we can get, and Roy and I can go back and do that.
Okay, thanks. So I think we're coming out of this with I guess there's two things. One is there's a recommended action that we start a background information gathering sub-team, what have you. Again, open, but it'll primarily be registries, but I would assume, or maybe it's registered, I really don't know who it primarily be, but open again, that we'll start with the information gathering. I think something we need to keep in mind for when we discuss it is that when we're discussing a recommendation, if we're discussing a recommendation that something needs to be done, that recommendation would have to include consideration of implementation and deployment time, as has been indicated by the registries. And yes, that takes into Simonetta's account, is given that reality, perhaps we will want to make a recommendation sooner than an informal recommendation, sooner than the end of the working group. And I think even stating that within the response serves as an initial flag that indeed there may be a recommendation coming at some point. We understand the issues. We need more information, and be warned. Does that work? I know you guys couldn't see my hand waving while I was talking, but does that sort of work as a sort of response and a recommended action on this one? I see a green check from Mikey. I see no hands. I see a couple more checks. Okay. Any other comments, last comments on 13? Yes, Bob.
Yeah, this is Bob. So I guess in general for both 12 and 13, are we going to form the subgroups now, or are we going to do that next meeting or offline?
I would suggest that we take the formation of a subgroup to the list, and that basically, I mean, certainly anyone here that wants to volunteer and says, I'm a 12, I'm a 13, you know, should do so, but I think given the number of people who aren't here now and such, so I would recommend that, you know, people that want to be involved volunteer now, that we take it to the list and that we confirm it, as it were, at the next meeting. Is that an okay approach?
Yeah, I think it makes sense. You know, Aubrey, I might suggest you as the chair, you know, kick it off with an email off list.
Sure. Yeah,
just
no, I'll follow up on that. So, yes,
okay.
I've got an action item. I don't know if we track action items, but I've got an action item.
Okay. Now,
I've been also chairing a group in the at-large part of the world, and they're very strict about keeping a list of action items that we all have to follow.
Okay.
And it's actually an interesting difference to the way working groups work on two sides of the organization. But anyhow, yeah, I got an action item.
Okay, I don't mean presumptuous to assign one to you, but
you're right. I actually like the notion of working groups coming up with action items for their chairs, their editors, their staff support. I think it's helpful in moving things along. So, great. Anything else now? Anybody have any comments that they were pent up about in any of the questions 1 through 13 where they had an additional remark that's not been captured that desperately needed to be captured before we called this particular part of the exercise done? Yes, Mikey.
This is Mikey. You triggered it when you said pent up. I especially appreciate the way that you have captured our ideas and transmogrified them into specific concepts and words and phrases, so I just wanted to get on the record with an attaboy on that. I thought that was fabulous.
Okay, great, and I think Marika has been doing the lion's share of that. Yes, Marika, you have your hand up.
Yeah, this is Marika. I just would like to encourage everyone, like, you know, following the addition of the notes from this call, I'll send a revised version, and just to encourage everyone to review the notes, because this normally gets included as part of the record of, you know, the initial and the final report, to really make sure that we have captured the discussions accurately, as well as the recommended action items. So that's something you can look out for on the mailing list.
Okay, thanks. So I will call that item closed. I don't see, actually, I don't have it in front of me. I don't see any other hands. Now, we have only 4 minutes left to the rest of the meeting, so we won't get too far. I just want to basically start with a quick overview of the work plan as it stands. We obviously will not get to the reviewing the mind map approach for the charter question. I'd like to put that as the starting point of the next meeting. And basically, Mikey, hopefully you can be ready with your software. I went to bring up mine today and found out my 30-day trial was over, and if I want to play further, I got to pay them big bucks. So at the moment, I don't have a license. Okay, so what we had coming up was, first of all, document review for Costa Rica. I don't believe we have any documents. Is that correct, Marika, that we're putting forward?
This is Marika. Yes, I think that is correct. The only thing we might want to work on, but it doesn't necessarily need to meet the meeting or the publication deadline, is a note for the meeting with the CCNSO. I think it would probably benefit the meeting if you know, we can come up with a clear description on what we're looking for and what our intent is for that meeting. As for the CCNSO, it's a new concept as well, you know, meeting with a GNSO working group. It's not normally the way they work. So I think that's something we might want to work on in the next couple of weeks.
An agenda or a comment. Does this comment worksheet that you've been putting out, does that get sort of formalized? And I know not published as an ICANN meeting note, but certainly published as a working group document, and does it get passed to the GNSO at all is a question I'd like to ask. If so, I don't know if we need to do anything other than the point at it, but that was something that I would bring up.
Yeah, this is Marika. I don't think usually we share the review of comments with the council. It's just included as part of the record when we, you know, publish the initial reports.
Okay, and I assume that's fine with everybody in the group, that we just keep that as a visible, openly visible, but not a reported document. Okay, well, with 1 minute left to go, basically we'll be going into the work plan for item A and a review of the map at the beginning of the next meeting. But at this point, I think that's it. Our next meeting is next week, same time, same place, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Any other last comments for today? I'm sorry it took a little longer than planned to get through these last questions, but I think we closed it up well, and I think that unless there are any pending issues that come up during the week, we start with this next week, and I've got an action item, put out two separate emails on separate sub-teams that will be starting to do information gathering related to questions 12 and 13, and comments to 12 and 13. Any other last words? In which case, thank you all. Have a great rest of the week, and I'll talk to you next week when I expect it will be James chairing again. I may or may not make the meeting because I'll be at an IGF meeting in Geneva. So I may not be on next week's meeting. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Avery.
Thank you, Avery.
Thanks, Avery. Great job.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Ricardo, you may now stop.